Hello again, everybody. Welcome back. Julie Knudsen with the podcast, Turning the Pointing Labrador, episode number 136. And today we're going to do an update on where G is. And for anyone, if this is the first podcast that you've heard, this is a podcast about dogs. And sometimes it's about all dogs in general. And sometimes it's about retrievers in general, and sometimes it's about just hunting retrievers, and sometimes it's about upland hunting retrievers. So it kind of spans sometimes a very wide chasm, and then sometimes we get very narrow. What I'm talking about right now does apply philosophically to everybody, all dogs, you know, all of them. But what I talk about and illustrate things with are the retrieving aspects. Since this, we're talking about a retriever right now, and I've been showcasing G, a little yellow female. Well, actually, a sturdy little yellow female, and talking about all the things in her upbringing, starting from, you know, housebreaking stuff and jumping on people's stuff, all the way to starting to emphasize more of what her ultimate job is going to be, which is a competitor and finally a hunter of 10 zillion birds a year. So that's what this is going to be about, and we're going to talk about a lot about philosophy of training and approaches. And I don't ever tell anybody what to do, never have. No one could ever tell me, this is what you have to do. So what I do is explain the things that I do and the approaches that I take and the reasoning behind it. And that allows people to still be themselves in working with their dogs, because that's all we can do anyway. You always come from a place of authenticity, ultimately. And however you are and however you see the world is basically how you interact with your dog, ultimately. So the this is what you do thing I have found ultimately is not that effective. But if you get people to think about things and look at them maybe with a little bit more of a dog perspective, it can be helpful in developing, you know, continuing your further training program. So I'm going to talk about G first, a little bit of business. I had told everyone in the last podcast, I believe, that a lot of this is being videoed and it's on a closed Facebook page. And that in order to get onto the Facebook page and see all this stuff, not just G, but her litter mates and other people's dogs and other, you know, stuff that people are doing, you have to be a friend, a Facebook friend, if you're not a Facebook person, with someone that's on Facebook that belongs to that group. And then they can invite you in. So since I've done that, I've gotten a number of just friend requests from people. And they're not friends with other people in the dog world. And so I don't know if they are friending me because they want to be included on the group or because they just saw my picture and went, oh, it's the most beautiful person I've ever seen. It could be any of that. So if you want to get into the group to see the videos and maybe even put some of your own on there, and you're friending me or someone else in the group, when you do that, you need to also send a message saying what it is, you know, why you're doing this, because it sounds kind of crazy, but I have to keep out some people that have gone after a lot of dog people and are attacking them for using chains and leashes and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it has to be people that are just a vested interest in this training. So if you do friend me, or if you have already and haven't gotten a response, it's because I'm not sure what it is you want to friend me for. And so if you'd explain that, then you can, you know, and want to get in there, you know, because you have a dog or whatever. Don't just say, hey, I want to get in a group, because if you don't look like a dog person and don't have, you know, dogs all over your Facebook stuff, then, you know, I'm not sure what it is you're wanting in the group for. So please explain so that you guys can get in there and see this. I'd really like to have as many people that are interested in this and can be benefited by it to join. So please, if you haven't heard back from me, that's probably why. Or anybody else in the group. And, you know, anybody that's in the group can invite other like-minded people, not just anybody. So other group members, if you're listening to this, make sure anybody is a really vested interest in training these dogs and doing the work. So Miss G, where we had been, just to slightly review, is we had been doing the walk every day, you know, single most powerful training tool for a little guy. we'd been doing that, and we'd been doing retrieves. And so on her walks, she had been completely tuning me out, which defeats the entire purpose of the walk. Tuning me out and just hunting for things to eat and chase and just play. And I didn't even need to be there. So the walk had, I'd lost what I'm trying to get out of that. And then on her retrieves, she just was having more fun running out, picking it up and running around and watching me get huffy over her not coming back. So I had lost all the stuff that I try to get with young dogs. So it's real easy when that stuff happens, people, you know, to go, oh, this dog is just kind of, it's not very smart, or it's just kind of very immature, it's whatever it is. What it was with her was that we were having too much fun, uncontrolled, completely unfettered fun, and that's all we were doing. And so that was the highlight of her day when we went out for a walk. And so the craziness and the complete independence on that was what was most important to her. And it showed up on the retrieve, where she wanted to have fun with that too and run around. And she wasn't being a bad dog, and she wasn't certainly not understanding. She was just doing what felt best. And that's what they do. So what I did was back up from that. We stopped taking the walk completely, which is not fun for me. And we stopped all the hanging around the house and having fun and, what, you know, just all this stuff that was mindless and just entertaining to her, we just stopped. And so her life became quite a bit more calm. You know, she would stay in the yard or stay in her kennel, and she would be there, and then we would come out, and I started basic obedience with her with the choke chain and the leash. Filmed that. That's on there. That went very well. She just picked up on that. But I think one of the reasons that she did was because we weren't out having, as I said in the last, going to the fraternity beer party anymore. There were just no parties. All the parties stopped. And so she just stayed in the dorm room or around the dorm area. So when we did go to do something, when we did go to class, it was the most interesting thing that was happening in her day. And so she was all into that. So she learned the obedience really, I mean, kind of surprisingly well. She heels and sits loosely, doesn't pull, doesn't just, you know, very nicely. And that come to me and heel around to the left side. She, you know, that was something to do and something to make her little mind work. And so she has, and now she's actually really, for a little her age, she's very, very good at it. And then on the retrieving, I would, because she does like to retrieve, and I'd have her on the long cord in the beginning, and she would go pick it up and then take off the other way. So I would jerk her on the cord a little bit. Well, I did that enough times that the bumper would fall out of her mouth. And so she just went out, didn't pick it up, and came back, because my jerking her back and it falling out of her mouth made her think, well, I don't actually pick it up. I just run out there and I run back. So I had to kind of happy up and get that going again. And then now because of patiently, without being frustrated or making judgments on her, now I can now go back out into the field while we're doing our thing, and I can throw stuff in the truffle hunting fields, and she runs out and gets it and comes back. So, and I only do twice, like I said, I only do two of them. So she's like, rats again, come on, let's do it again. And that's all we do. So that the next time we do retrieves, she is just very much, she's more invested in doing them and coming back. So she gets one more. So that worked really well. Now we're back doing the walk every day. We are still dragging the cord, because I'm not going to take any chances. So she goes out with her little puppy choke chain. And again, she's a sturdy girl, so there's nothing, no harm done with this. Dragging this real light nylon cord. And it's completely changed. She stays a lot closer to me, which ultimately, you know, when she's hunting, it won't be doing that. But she just stays close. And when she stops to go hunt something to eat, I can just call her or say hup or something, and she just comes running, and she doesn't think she's in trouble at all. That dragging that cord just seems to be her reminder that we are together and that this is a mutual thing. I'm not dropping her off at the frat party. So it's turned out exceedingly well. On the walk today, she has discovered now mouse nests that exist under some heavy cover. So we were mouse nest hunting, but I could call her off of it. But I have a feeling that's going to also become, you know, there's little living things under there. She hasn't, it looks kind of pointy, but she hasn't really, she's just discovering things out there. So that's, and they all do that. I'm fine with that. And then when I just call her off, I haven't had to pick up the cord at all. So I'm extremely happy. But what has worked was I took away the fun stuff and made the fun stuff be the classroom work. And I know for a lot of people, that would be very hard to do. You know, because she's just a puppy and I'm having so much fun with her and I want to spend a lot of time with her and I like this and I feel this way. And so when people approach the dog from that side, then they're probably not going to be able to do what I did with her. But what I did with her was just a short few weeks, couple weeks thing where I made the highlight of her day be our shared work together. That was the most fun thing. And the cord kind of got her back going with me, but basically not doing it for a while and wanting to enjoy life and wanting to be with me took her over. And so she invested herself in out and back on retrieves and the obedience work. So she's ecstatic and she feels a great sense of kind of puppy accomplishment because I'm just happy with everything she's doing. And when I called her this morning from the mouse nest, she just came running full speed, you know, where the back legs are up in front of the front legs. She was just so happy to be out there doing that and then interacting with me. So I got back where I wanted to be. But I did it by responding to me and being with me and learning stuff and doing things with me was the most fun, not the good, we're out in the field, I'll see you later, I got things to do. And I would caution people with puppies, and everybody loves to see a happy puppy. Nobody more than me, but I want a happy puppy that's moving in the direction of the continuing work they're going to have in their life. And ultimately, that's the happier puppy. Because they're constantly being challenged. They constantly get to learn and figure out new things and have more fun. Because again, we're leveraging all that training work and that's how they get to do their retrieves. So it works out really well. I'm really happy with this little dog. She's shown me a lot by her response to this. Had I taken the fraternity parties away and she just gets shower and on doing the work, I would be a little more disappointed because we want these dogs to enjoy the challenge of life and learning what their jobs are and doing things with us. So that's a really excellent sign. I'm real happy with this. Wouldn't have happened if I'd have just kept letting her do all this stuff that she thought was a lot of fun just because she's a puppy, okay? Because when you teach them that at that age, then they take on that perspective. And it's like having a little kid that never had to contribute at all, that could just eat whatever it wanted and sit in front of the TV all day and play video games. And then all of a sudden, you know, they hit a certain age and now they need to become respectful and functional. And they're going, huh, I'm not going to do that. And you wonder what happened to them. Well, they never got to learn at an age when they were capable of learning what their role is and stuff. So things going very well with G. Which brings me to the topic that I kind of want to talk about because I've been helping other people with their dogs lately. And one of the things that's very hard for people to do, and it starts now, is to teach the dog that you're teaching to take responsibility for their work. And I'm probably going to need to explain this. But dogs need to take responsibility for doing what you've taught them. So for a really simple example of that is if you're teaching, let's just say, well, let's use basic obedience. You're teaching a dog to heel and sit. So you say heel and you kind of jerk on the leash to get him to go with you. And then you say sit and you jerk on the leash to make him sit, right? And then so you teach him. What this means, he'll be at my side, sit means drop your bottom. You teach him that, and then you go out every day and you work on it, trying to advance it. And they're not sitting, so you jerk on the leash, right? And then they don't always heel when you say, so you jerk. So every day you're going out, and basically, what I always say to everybody is you're doing the work for them. They don't actually just have to respond to the word sit and sit down, because you're going to pull up on their heads and then they're going to sit down. Or you're going to pull on the leash and then they're going to go. So they're not responding just to the word that you said, the cue that you gave them. You also have to initiate the physical work for them, and then they'll do it. And so when you stop doing those things, they stop responding. And if you ever go out and do some work with your dog and see if you're doing that, if you're doing a lot of the work for them, because the goal in just fundamental obedience is that they hear the word, they respond and follow through with the action without you having to come in and help them do it. And when you call them, and this is one of the biggest reasons that people, you know, everybody wants a dog to come when they're called. Everybody, every dog, everywhere. You call your dog, you want them to come. And if you do your basic obedience with a leash, never mind the treat thing, all right, I'm not going to even address that. You do this with a leash, and you teach them that when you say whatever word you say, I use here, whenever you use the word here, okay, then we do a little jerk on the leash and get them to come to us. So you do that once or twice, and then you call them and see what happens. If they don't respond, then again you jerk on the leash. What you need to do while you're doing that, if that's always what you do, then when they're out 50 feet away from you and you call them, they look over at you. There's no jerk on the leash, the normal things where you initiate the work for them. And so they may or may not, or may kind of sidle their way back. In other words, you don't have the response. So back early in that part, when you teach them the word here, and you do an enforcement, that's what I like to call it, then you have them do it. You enforce at such a level that they don't want you to keep doing that. If you keep benignly helping them sit, helping them come to you, helping them walk with you, keep benignly doing it, figuring, and I know the thought pattern, is well, pretty soon they'll just start doing it because I've shown them that's what I want. Some will. Most will not if something else comes up. So those of you that goes, they're real good without distractions. That's because something else came up and now they're not going to respond to you anymore. So when you enforce, however you do it, you have to enforce it at a level that the dog goes, I'm going to just come when you call. You don't have to jerk on that leash again. And you teach them to take responsibility for responding to the command. It's really that simple, but you have to do that everywhere. And generally the best way you do it is by when you enforce sit, right? Which in the beginning you teach sit, push their bottom down, pull the leash up, push their bottom down. And pretty soon you come in there with a jerk on the leash or a little pop on the bottom. I like the little plastic thing. Okay, if I just keep having to do that, then I am doing all of the work. I need it where they do it. So I am going to enforce in a calm manner that you need to sit and you don't want me to keep doing the work for you. Same way you would do with a kid, right? So it's very important at this early stage, and I'm doing that with G right now. It's very important that you, once you've taught them and shown them and been consistent and kept your standard the same, now we're going to transfer the workload over to you, dog. And when I call you or I say sit, you do it without me having to assist. Now this is going to transfer over. So, okay, retriever people, especially competitive or people that are hunting a lot, this is very important. And a real good example for this, we're talking pointing labs here. Let's go to the upland field. When you go through an upland field with a dog, now this is just my take on it. There's people that won't agree with this. That's fine. When I go through an upland field with a dog, it's their job to find the birds, not mine. I don't tell them, look over here, look over here, look over here. I give them opportunities with the wind, and it's their job to find the bird. It's also their job to stay with me. And particularly on young, if you have a flushing dog, they have to stay in gun range. If you have a pointing dog in the beginning, they need to stay in gun range. So you're there to see what happens. So they need to stay within a certain range of you walking through a field. Now, for all of you that don't do that and you just hike, exact same thing goes. If you're going on a hike with your dog, they need to stay fairly close to you. There is not one compelling reason that they need to be far away or out of sight. Not one. So, you know, and as all the other people that are out there hiking with you, I don't want your dog over messing with me or my dogs. Keep them with you. So this goes, dogs can take the responsibility for that. But you start teaching them right now. And it's that they take the responsibility. They know which direction you're heading. They know where they're supposed to stay with regards to you. And then at the same time, they do their job. Complete, where you're not whistling, yelling. Again, remember I've said this in so many podcasts. I get so many times I get people saying, my dog keeps hunting out of range. What do I do? And my answer is always get them a new handler. Because when you let the dog go out of range, then you just told them that was okay. So there's a whole, and I have podcasts on this, how to teach a dog to stay in gun range. And it would apply to how to keep a dog to stay with you on a hike. That's actually a whole training regime that you go through. And you teach them, your job to stay with me, not my job to constantly remind you. And I know there's a bunch of folks listening to this that have dogs that stay with them. And if they change direction, then they stay with them and they change direction and they stay close enough. That is how whatever close level that person wants. I am taking G right now. Right now, she doesn't know it. We're just out going through the field looking at finding mice nests now and really enjoying ourselves. She's got that long cord on, which I'll take off when I know I'm safe. But she's got that long cord on. And so now when she kind of hangs up like she does on the mouse nest, and I just call her or say hup, and she comes running because she's learned, ooh, I need to pay attention to this lady and I need to stay with her. And I never let her get very far now. We're already at this stage that she's going to stay the gun range thing. And I teach her, hey, remember, you got to pay attention to me. I can't enforce this right now. She's too young, but I'm already showing, hey, we go wherever, whatever direction I go. I don't follow you. You follow me. Obviously, upland hunting, that switches. But right now, you go where I want to go, and you stay with me. You can be a little behind, over the side, out front, fine with me. But now you need to have an awareness of me all the time. So I'm teaching that to this little dog without any nasty stuff at all. Mainly, it was my basic obedience out just in the yard that now has bought me this thing where she stays with me. Also taking away the total craziness fun of it for a while. So now I've already got that, okay, we're connected out here. And I need to always have some awareness of her. That's going to do good for whatever hiking, hunting, taking a walk, whatever it is. We already have that deal where it's her job. I'm teaching right now. We're not there yet. I'm teaching her your job to have an awareness for me all the time. Now, if there's any upland hunters listening to this that say a dog cannot be a good hunter if they're paying any attention to you, and I just would beg to disagree. If everybody remembers a few podcasts back when I talked about a little competition we had here at the end of the season last year with all my clients, and we had three birds in the field, and whoever spoke the least, made the least sound or command or whistle or anything, won. And seven dogs were hunted the entire field and never a word spoken or a whistle blown. Never. And yes, they were steady. They just walked to the field. They didn't have to say anything. They didn't have to hop. They didn't have to whistle. And the dogs worked with them, pointed. I think most of these guys were pointers, pointed all the birds, weren't told, whoa. The dogs did everything without, and very efficiently, well, half of them were four times, or almost four times. They're very efficient because they didn't have to instruct them. They didn't have to tell them what to do because those dogs knew we're out here hunting together and they knew what their job was and they took full responsibility for it. So I just can't emphasize that enough. And there's a knack to working with a dog, but you have to be, to get that kind of a thing going, but you have to be aware of it. So if you're sort of an enabler, well, I love the dog and I'll do this and I can, and it makes you feel good because you're helping them out and you're doing all kinds of stuff for them. Okay. that's just like having that kid that just gets to sit on the couch and you buy video games for them and they just enjoy themselves and they never have to take responsibility for who's paying for that and, you know, who's buying the food and who pays for the lights to come on. And if they never, ever have to give back and be a part of contributing, then that kid, one, is going to have a rough time and because everyone's going to always have to do stuff for them. And two, getting out in the world on their own, they're not going to be equipped. And I just feel the same way about dogs. I want the dogs that I have and train to be fully equipped to deal with lots of stuff, right? Being in a kennel, being in a crate, being alone, being in the yard by themselves. And then when we go do the work, they understand their job. And I don't have to help them and do it for them. Okay, I don't have to help it and do it for them. Like those of you that are teaching dogs to run blinds. In the beginning, you start with pattern blinds. And when it's new and scary for the dog, you kind of move closer because proximity makes things easier for them. Move closer when you have to cast and do stuff. Only for a little while. Then pretty soon, you got to just stay at the start place there. And they need to get out there 50 yards, 150 yards, 250 yards. And take the cast. You've got to teach them. I'm not always going to be there to make this easy for you. You're eventually going to have to start doing this on your own. And that starts from basic obedience. And all of the work that you go all the way through to the very end. That they take responsibility. And for you pointing guys, part of that is you teach them. They don't, very few do it naturally, some. When they go on point, okay, now you're done. You can't go do stuff. You can't chase a bird. You can't do all this stuff. It's your job, not mine. That's one of the reasons on the de-chase thing that I do for upland dogs, flushing or pointing. You teach the dog, bird flying in the air is not yours. It's just not yours. The only birds that are yours are the ones that we drop. That's it. And so that's a whole de-chase thing that I have. But that way, when a dog is out there, and if, you know, if they're on point, they're far away, even if they're kind of far away from you, or they're out in a field and a bird flies by, some guy flushed one up from a field next to you and a bird flies by, you don't have to call them off. You don't have to tell them not to do anything. They know that a bird flying by, unless you suddenly shoot it and drop it, it is not theirs. And you don't have to be right there to tell them that. And so all of your dog training should be, even on a little guy and all the way through, I'm going to teach these dogs these things that I want. And then I'm going to make sure that they know it. And then I'm going to enforce these things so they know I'm very serious about it. And then I'm going to transfer the responsibility to following through on what I say over to them. I'm not going to continue to help them with all of this stuff. So I hope that one makes sense because that's a very important part of this. So real quickly to kind of begin to summarize this up, let me talk about little G, 14 weeks old, whatever she is. Me starting to transfer responsibility over to her for the work that she's doing. Now she's real young, but she seems real capable of getting this stuff. If she didn't, I would not be doing it, but she does. So when I go get her, and we're going to go out and we're either going to do obedience or we're going to go on the walk. Both of those things mean she's got her little choke chain and the long leash cord thing that I have. So when I go get her and I have that leash, she goes over in front of me and sits down and wants me to put this thing on her head. Right. So we've already transferred some responsibility. I don't have to go catch her. And wild and crazy, having a good time, and I have to make her do this stuff. She already knows, okay, when we come out, we're going to go do this stuff. So I'm not exaggerating. She comes up and sits down, and I put the thing on over her head. So we already got this going really well about, it's time to work. All right, I'm going to go over because she's going to put the leash on me. So you see, I've transferred some responsibility over to her. Again, I'm not having to yell, scream, go chase her down, lure her with something. She understands that. Now, she might be just making this real easy for me, but certainly most dogs could be much better than they are at this stuff. So that's one of the things. And now when we do basic obedience, and she knows what Heal and Sit is. I'm not getting real tricked out on this stuff. Okay, I will find out where her head is when we first start and see how tuned in. If she's kind of not totally tuned in, I'm going to do a jerk on the leash on Sit, you know, or maybe one on Here a little bit, and then I'm going to stop and see what result I get. And when she starts trying really hard and responding really well, you know, I'm going to reach down there and scruffle her up something fierce. I mean, she still has to stay seated, but I'm going to let her know, you're doing the work, girl. That's it. I'm going to acknowledge her giving me her best effort. And if she's not giving me her best effort, I'm going to go in there and kind of make her wish that she did. You know, by enforcing these things with the leash, she seems very sensitive and very responsive to enforcement things. So on this little 14-week-old dog, she's starting to take ownership of her part of what we're doing. And like today when I called her off we had found some, must have been a great mouse location. And I called her, and she didn't want to come off the mice and come over to me. But I called her one time and just waited to see. And you could see her little mind was thinking. And then she went, I'm going to go over there where she is. And she had that little back legs in front of the front legs, happy thing. Oh, I found mice, but I'm going to come to you. Okay, she is doing the work here. She's figuring stuff out. And she's taking responsibility. So she got a ton of praise over that deal. I mean, it was like, yes, this is a good dog. So that's where we're transferring responsibility over. And when you have a little bit bigger of dogs, whether it's just maybe a year old dog or older, so watch how much you have to do for them. So when you go somewhere, I don't care what you're doing. You go somewhere, you get them out of the vehicle. What do? Very telling. If they just get out of the vehicle and go off to explore and do whatever they want, okay, they're going to make you go get them. Or you're doing all the work. Not them. Not them coming out and sitting down and going, what are we going to do? When you do leash them up, and this is, pay attention to this one now. When you do leash them up because you're going to go take a walk, do some work, do something, do you have to wait a while till they kind of get connected up with you? Or do they get connected up with you right off? So if you have to kind of do the work to get their mind over to where it needs to be, then you're doing the work. And a good goal, from my perspective, is to teach this dog, okay, we're going to do work now. Time for you to join me. Time for you to come over here and be aware of what we're having and do your best. And that goes with all the work. So that's just something to think about. I encourage people to think about. Just sit back and see how much of the work you're doing for your dog on day-to-day things in the house, on the technical work that you're doing, on the field work that you're doing. Do you have to keep telling the dog what to do? Do you have to keep reminding them? Do you have to keep enforcing stuff all the time because you just have to? Then you're the one that's expending all the energy and they're just going along with you. Where you can have, if you want, a thing where they know their job and you know your job and you guys go out there kind of like two equals, and it's a very mutually rewarding thing. So that's today's. For all you guys on the East Coast, I hope you can dig yourself out there and get out of the snow. And then we got another one coming, so it's a wild and exciting winter. But we can always do some dog things. If nothing else, go at this, who's doing all the work in my relationship with my dog, and see if you can figure that out, because that can be a very insightful thing as to why you have some of the issues you do or why things are going so well for you. So I offer that. I hope everyone is staying healthy, and G and I will be back soon with the next chapter in the saga.